hear new people who've never experienced anything like this before and are probably asking, what the hell is this all about and why am I here? And maybe I'm in the utterly wrong place. And we have here old practitioners that have been kind of sitting 20 years, and the same question is bound to arise. What have I done all these 20 years? And I want to use an image to reflect on this. And the image came actually from the Hanukkah candles. It's the middle of winter. The image of Hanukkah is we light the lights as a symbol of life, as a symbol of the light and the warmth in the middle of darkness, in the middle of the shortest day in the year, in the shadow. And the light brings some living energy, a symbol of living energy. And it's cold, and many of us are cold. But no symbol is the complete truth. And the Buddha has come with a totally opposite symbol, which is about fire. And in the East, there is another way of looking at fire. And this is that fire burns fuel. When it burns, it's full of agitation. It's full of restlessness. It eats the fuel. It burns. It's hot. You can't touch it. It eats the fuel. And when the fuel, the wood, is finished, it's released. It goes back to the universe again. It's at peace. Fire is an image of burning, of not at peace. And it's an interesting image that fire is released when it's burnt its fuel. And when it's released, it goes back into the energy of the universe. And so there's a kind of negative quality about it. And the Buddha said again and again and again, we are burning. Human beings are burning. What did he mean? There's a very famous sutta called the fire sermon. When he found, sutta is traditional Buddhist text from the earliest period. He found some Indian fire worshippers, as most Hindus worship fire. The god of fire is Agni. So there's in classic puja, classic worship in Hinduism is Agni puja, the practice of worship of fire. And the Buddha said, don't worship fire, know that you are burning. What are we burning with? We are burning. You are burning. We are burning with restlessness. We are burning with need to do things. We are burning with stress. We are burning with running after things. We are burning, in his language, with desire. Desire to change something. Desire to become something. Desire to, or desire to stop something. Or desire to get rid of something. And in a certain way, if we look at our life and ask, what is real peace? Then I think we can understand there's something in us that is not quiet, that is not real peace, that doesn't know where to find real peace. Because there's a non-quiet isheket in us, which is the Buddha's language, burning. Something is burning. And we can see it on a community level, we can see it on the global level. We change the climate The climate, the whole planet is burning because we can't stop burning things. We can't stop burning the fuel and the cars and the buying of stuff and the using of stuff and the consuming of stuff. And the whole planet is heating up. Everything is burning. And I notice how much here, for example, in Israel, I was just talking about it with Simi, how it's taken for granted that we are afraid, that we are anxious, that there is a level of anxiety in the culture, now perhaps in the globe, in the world right now, and the children grow up in it. And it's a level of non-quiet in the soul, which in a way is a tragedy, but it's another form of this burning. And the interesting thing is that the word nirvana means quenching the fire, kibui esh. That's the word nirvana. The meaning of it is to quench the fire, to cool down, to be cool. But nirvana, because every time it's mentioned, everybody wakes up. And so, make sure you're all awake, because it's another thing we want, of course. This too, we want to consume nirvana. It's a very deep and mysterious word, but it has a quality of cooling down, cooling the fires of desire, of anger, of restlessness, of no peace, and peace in the sense of the shleimut, shalom shleimut, completeness, peace in the quality of completeness. Of everything finding its rest. Coolness means everything finding its rest in completeness. Because nothing needs to be changed, and nothing needs to be destroyed or consumed. It's finding its rest. The fire goes back to the universe. So we may not like this image very much, because to some extent we're addicted to our fire. And if you say coolness to people, well, if they're an old hippie, you'll say, yeah, it's good to be cool. Let's be cool. It's kind of got a nice quality about this image. But others would say, well, I need my passion. I need passion. I don't want to be cool. I don't want to be cooled down. I don't want someone to throw cold water on my passion, on my inner fire. I like the Hanukkah lights, the bright lights, the light of fire. I don't want to be cold. And to some extent, this is a misunderstanding, I think, of what the teachings are about. Because the teachings are not about cooling down the life energies or stopping the life energies in any way. It's actually more releasing. But if we think of what passion means, passion is something for, is always after. Passion is a driving. Passion does burn us, and it hurts us. The passion of love is a fire which sometimes can really hurt us. The passion of wanting something can hurt us. There is a lot of suffering in passion. Passion is for something, and when we have this something, we have peace. And we have quiet. We eat. We're hungry. We're agitated. We're hungry. We need to eat. As soon as we eat, everything stops. There's quietness again. And this passion has this sense of restless wanting. So I think if we look carefully at passion, it's actually we're a little bit addicted to the fire. We don't know what life is like without it, so we're a bit suspicious. If without the fire, I'll be nothing. I'll be cooled down to zero. I'll be frozen. And it's not like that. Peace doesn't mean no energy. It means release. It means completeness. It has a quality of freedom, of fire going back to the universe. Not dead, fire in the universe, but it goes back, it connects with everything. There's a peace there which is connected. So all of that is some images to do with what it is that we are about in our spiritual practice, especially Buddhist practice. What is it? Meditation and our practice is in some way about cooling down. Cooling down those fires. Cooling down the fires of isheket, non-quiet, of agitation, of burning up, of consuming ourselves, of anxiety, of anger, of restlessness, of lack of peace, of not knowing where peace is, and not knowing what is real peace, of no completeness, of fragmentation, means we are divided, we are fragmented. And meditation is a way, a first step of re-finding this peace in us and in the world. So it's a very meaningful thing for us to do. It can be a very important thing for us to do. And in some way, the Buddhist teachings offer some kind of a road map. Some kind of map for us to return, to come back home, to a peace, to a coolness and a steadiness and a quiet in us and in our life. It's quite difficult to find this just on our own. It's not impossible. But the teachings do offer some kind of road map for us. And that leads to this course here. We're here in a sense because we're following some kind of a road map, some kind of a basic map on what kind of inner work we need, what kind of inner practice we need, a little bit to cool the fires. And the way back, it's a way back home. This map is a map that leads us back home. It doesn't lead us out, away somewhere else. It doesn't lead us to some other place. It's not about Messiah, Mashiach. It's not about finding another Garden of Eden in another place, in the past, in the future. It's a map that leads us back home in our life as we lead it right now. And I do think that's something very special and unique about Dharma, the Buddhist spiritual way, that it takes the vessel, the kli, the vessel of our life as we live it now, and that becomes the way back home. Through our life, we, as we live it in this moment, we return home to our completeness. So the living experience is the journey for us. The lived experience. It's of this kind have as their, I would say, main inspiration two texts out of thousands. And I must say that there is a huge, huge wisdom of inner practice in the Buddhist teachings. Traditionally, there are 84,000 forms of meditation and techniques and paths in the tradition. 84,000, that's it. And actually, if you do open the text, you see so many different ways for different people in different situations. But two texts, I think, have formed a kind of a meaningful map, a meaningful road, which, for very many historical reasons, have arrived in the West and have formed the basis for Vipassana practice and Vipassana retreats. And this is partly because around 60 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, there was a movement out of the monasteries into the community. And the practices that came out of the monasteries to the community had to fit the needs of people in the community, householders, people with families and jobs and work. And so the kind of methods that were chosen, in a way developed, were fitting to people in the community in the East, in Burma and Thailand, and also in the West. The two suttas or texts that we're talking about are the Satipatthana Sutta and the Anapanasati Sutta, which no?
Anapana.
I said that, didn't I? Sutta. And the meaning is mindfulness. Basically, Anapanasati is mindfulness of breathing. Satipatthana Sutta is the awareness of the four foundations of mindfulness. It's not so important what they're called, but I think the message that they bring and the teachings that they bring is important. There are different interpretations of these teachings depending on different teachers, and I know that many of you come here from the Goenka tradition, and I myself have experienced many retreats with Ma Goenka. And these two suttas have formed a kind of a root on which are built many different paths depending on teachers, monasteries, lineages, cultures, etc. So different ways of interpreting these two texts and these two traditions. We're following quite, I think, in this retreat and in similar retreats, we follow quite faithfully the Satipatthana Sutta. The Satipatthana Sutta basically says there are four places which are places for us to work. Four dimensions of the human being. Dimensions, nemad. Four levels, if you like, although level has a sense of hierarchia. It's not quite like that. But there is a sense of hierarchia in this too. But we shouldn't take the hierarchy too seriously. Four levels, so we say, or dimensions of the human being with which we work. The first is the body and the breath. And up to now, this is what we've been doing, and we will continue to work with the body and the breath during this whole retreat. And the body and the breath are a foundation. It's a base for spiritual work. And I'll go into this a bit this evening. Another dimension, a second dimension, is the qualities of reaction and response that we have to the world around us. I like, I don't like, the feeling which in the Goenka tradition, vedana, sensations, responses, reactions, sensations in which are responses to the world, arising in the body-mind. We will be touching this as well. Foundation is more on the level of mind. We will be touching mind. Mind is a dimension of meditation. Mind is in a way, mind looking at mind. And the fourth foundation, which is described as dhammas or truths, truths that we discover. And we'll be touching that as well. all of these four dimensions of the human being, our way is basically the same. Our way is mindfulness. Satipatthana Sutta, the mindfulness of the four foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness is the tool that we have. Mindfulness is our attention. Mindfulness is our power of knowing, our awareness. The power that we have to know. It's a huge power. We don't appreciate it. And the very first meeting together, I mentioned that it's the power that we can take refuge in. That means we can find in this power our home. We can trust this power more. We take refuge in the Buddha, meaning we take refuge or we find in this power of our mind, we find our home. We find our refuge, our rest. So we use the power of mind. And the Buddha said, use the power of mind in all positions. When you get up, when you sit down, sounds like the Shema. When you get up, when you go to bed, when you move your arm, when you move your arm out, when you move your arm back, when you look up, when you look down. In other words, in every moment, using the power of mind or mindfulness. Mindfulness, being full of mind. Filling our life with mind. Filling our life with attention. So we'll be talking about this also a lot during the course of the next few days. What is it to live with attention? What is it to live full of mind? Because this is not just something we do now. This is a retreat to learn tools of filling our life with awareness. What is it like to live with awareness when we get up and when we go to sleep? And when we move our arm out and we move our arm back. First foundation, which is, and we're starting with the first foundation in this course today. Yesterday, when we arrived, we started straight away paying attention to breathing, paying attention to the body. And many people say the first reaction to them is, wait a minute, is this spiritual? What is it in this? This looks to me very mundane, rather boring, rather pointless. I mean, I have a body. I'm spending... I don't need to pay attention to my body unless it's sick. I don't need to pay attention to my breath unless I can't breathe. Unless I have a cold in the nose and my nose is blocked. Why do I have to pay attention to my breath? But people sometimes find it's very strange and confusing. But I think we have to understand that we have withdrawn. And what's the word for withdrawn? Laseget. We have withdrawn ourselves from our bodies. We have withdrawn ourselves into a world of thinking, of worrying, of planning, of doing, of views about life, of conflicts. The body is forgotten. Everything that we don't need to pay attention about the body, we switch off and put on automatic. We live on automatic pilot while we're all in our heads trying to plan our life and trying to get the best out of life, and our bodies, we become disembodied, like we don't have a body unless it hurts. We don't know that we breathe unless someone says breathe, and then we can breathe maybe three times we know we breathe, and then we're already back in the mind again. So in the body is a place, the first foundation is important, because the body is a place where we can begin to drop back into the experience of spontaneous, direct connection with the living process. It's there that's the easiest and most direct place that we can reconnect with the living process as it is, the life as we live it, without interpretation, commenting on it, trying to do things with it, without busyness with it, without planning it, without burning, without burning. So the place we meet the life as it flows, as it is, the easiest place is the body. And that's why we start with the body. And that's where we make the connection again. We reconnect. We come out of this withdrawal place of closing ourselves into mind, into thinking. We come out of it into the connection with the living experience. Here, in the living body, is our laboratory. Is a mabada, is a laboratory where we rediscover the experience of pure living as it is, just as it is. Sometimes someone once said to me today, or yesterday I think, someone said to me, I find real peace in nature. And I had immediately the image of put together the image of how we love nature. We go out to nature and we see a tall tree and we enjoy this tall tree, and we see a small tree and we enjoy this, and we see a flower that's yellow and we enjoy this, and we see a blue flower and we enjoy this, and we're at peace because of something is connecting us and interested in life just as it is. Not to be doing, the minute we want to cut the tree or pull the flower or, you know, do agriculture with that, with the plants, we're in again the burning. But here we are, if we're just there with nature, but we can do the same with the nature here. And we don't need to go anywhere for that. Here, like the Buddha said, a long breath and a short breath. We breathe like this, we breathe like that. The feeling is like this, the feeling is like that. The sensation is like this, the sensation is like that. We are connecting with one breath, and then we go somewhere else with our thoughts. Constant living experience. It's like a tall tree and a small tree and a big bush and a yellow flower and a blue flower in nature. So we do a kind of journey, a tiul, through our being, through our body, and it's the same. It's the peace that comes from connecting with nature. The blood flowing, the breath coming, the touch of things, the sounds of the birds, it's the same. And there's a peace in that, of joining again with the nature in us, in the lived experience. Making a friend, again of our lived experience, our body, bodily life. Breath, the breathing is part of the first foundation, and we've used the breath as a primary place with which we go on this journey back home, the journey home to our life. The breath is just simply a very, very well developed and a very good and useful a place for us to reconnect with the living being, the living body. And I think the breath is a place where we train ourselves in mindfulness. It teaches us things. If we learn to notice the breath, firstly the breath is rather delicate, so that we lose it and we find it. So already there's a challenge in that. Already there's a bit of a challenge. It's a little bit pushing us to go one step forward. So the breath is with us all the time, but it's delicate. Then it has a quality of being in control of us, and we're in control of it. So it's a real interesting mind-body phenomena. We can sometimes control it, and it can sometimes control us. We discover something about ourselves, about mind and about body, and the breath is a bridge between the mind and the body. Connecting with the breath is a very simple tool for us to find steadiness and calmness in our daily life. So it's a direct tool for us to use in our life, more simple than almost anything else, and more powerful. We can connect with our breath, and in daily life, in two breaths, things look different. There's less stress, there's less worry, there's less bishaket. Just two breaths is enough in our ordinary life to bring us back to steadiness. So the breath is an interesting and important tool that we're learning here how to use in any situation in life, whether we're in trouble or joy. In any situation, connection with the breath brings us into the living experience and things look different. So it's a very useful tool for our life, which is why we emphasize it here at the beginning of this retreat. And we will emphasize it all the way through the retreat. Because it's subtle, because it's a little bit subtle, it helps us to train in mindfulness. It's a good place to train, to sharpen the tools of our awareness. Because mindfulness is about noticing. Right? It's about noticing. It's about allowing life in. To be aware, to be awake, that's mindfulness. And the awareness of breathing, because it's subtle, and because it invites us, that it's not so easy, it's a training in this. We start with the breath, and we continue with being able to see the plants, other people, to read the face of our friend or our enemy, to go out into life and just notice and just be awake and not be closed off. That practice, that training starts with breath. If we can see the different qualities of the breathing, we notice things, we notice very delicate things, we notice the space between the in-breath and the out-breath, we notice how our body feels when we breathe. We notice what goes on as we breathe in the being. That's training. And we take it with us into our life. And there's something very beautiful about the breath, which is it's not really anybody's breath. It doesn't belong to anybody in a way. It's just breath. It's just the experience of flow, touch, movement. We don't need to worry about this body being a sick body or a healthy body, this particular person or another particular person. It's a story I often tell because I really like to remember it. I once had a class of old people, Vatikim of the kibbutzim in the north, and there was a class of 15 people. They were all above the age of 70. And they used to come every week and teach meditation. After one session, particular session I remember, it was so quiet. You couldn't hear a thing. The room is like as if we just vanished, all of us, in this incredible quietness. It was about 25 minutes. There was 15 of us in the room. No moving, no restlessness, just deep quiet. And it was very special. And so after this half an hour, 25 minutes, I rang the bell and I said, wow, that was something. And I asked them what they went through, what happened. And one old lady said, you know how amazing it is to breathe and just to meditate on the breathing. Do you realize what a relief? When I breathe, I am not 70 years old. I don't have pains in my back. I don't have my grandchildren pestering me and wanting things from me. I don't have family problems. I don't have kibbutz problems. I'm free. There's just breathing. Nothing else. And so she was saying how much it helped her. So there's something very clean about mindfulness as a whole. It's not just mindfulness of breathing, but the breathing as a way in, like an entrance gate to mindfulness. It's something very clean. We don't need to be a person there. We don't need to be somebody. We don't need to be healthy. We don't need to be anything. We just are there alive and breathing. Is also teaching us how to collect the life that I mentioned, the automatic life, the life of the automatic pilot, tayas automati, how to go close to our life. It's the breath that does it, because the breath we usually put on automatic. When we can bring it out of the automatic territory, we are becoming awake. We are becoming aware. When we bring stuff from the world of automatic, or the world of ignorance, of not knowing, the world of unconscious, we are opening our awareness. And so the breath is a very good tool for us to do this, to lift up the world of the not known into the world of the known. The breath is a kind of bridge between the known and the not known. And that's another reason why we use it. In the beginning, if we pay attention, if we are mindful, if we are connected to breath and body, we are taking the energy away from the fire that's burning us of what I must do, what I need to do, what I don't like, what I do like, what's right, what's not, the dizziness of our minds. We take away some of the energy and the power of this busy mind. And what that does is create space. And I think all of us maybe felt a little bit of this, that somehow a little bit of space is created in us. We get up slowly, we walk outside, we sit here and we breathe, the breath is flowing, and something opens. There's a more space inside us. There's more simplicity. That's the place. That space is the place where truth can arise for us. And many of us want to use the retreat to solve problems, or to get answers, or to find truth for us. I would suggest to you, don't work too hard at chasing truth, because it's a bit like chasing a butterfly. The more we chase things, the more it runs away. If we sit very quiet and still, the butterfly may come and touch us and come to us. If we create space inside us, then insight, which is the meaning of vipassana, is insight. Insight arises by itself. We just have to allow space and not be too busy with ourselves and what we want and what we need and what we think and what we don't think. We just have to cool the fire inside us. And truth comes up. Truth emerges. We don't have to look for it. It will arrive. want to finish with one of the truths, or one of the experiences, or the interesting realizations that happen. Reminds me of a story told by an old Vipassana practitioner, not old in years, I mean long time Vipassana practitioner, who went to Tibet. And he was on a tour of the Tibetan mountains and in the countryside with another a whole group of Western Vipassana practitioners. And they came across a yogi, Tibetan yogi, in a cave. And the Tibetan yogi had been there a long, long time, and with his wife. The two of them were living together in a cave and practicing together for many, 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 many years. And the story goes that this long-time Vipassana yogi, American, through interpreter, asked the Tibetan hermit, the hermit in the cave, "What's your practice?" And the man didn't understand anything. What do you mean? What's your practice? What do you do? What's your technique? What do you practice? Very curious, he wanted it for himself, I guess. He said, I don't understand the question. Well, do you watch the breath? Is that what you do? Do you sit and meditate on breathing? Interpreter interpreted, and they had a dialogue together. And the old yogi said, I don't need to watch the breath, because everything is breathing. So it's all breathing. So how can I, what do I watch? That's his answer. Everything is breathing. So what is it that I need to watch? And I think this is a message in us, there's a message in us, for us in this, that that our contact with the world, it may seem, especially to people who've never done this before, that we're all rather locked in ourselves here, and that we're all sitting quietly and kind of in a bubble. But actually, the quietness allows us to begin to understand that we're in constant relationship. And the breath is a really good place to discover this. The breath comes to us from the world. We send back our breath into the world. There is a flow of air. There is a flow of touch of cool air. There is a connection with the world. The meditation experience, we are never in a box. We hear the birds. We feel the room. We feel the air on the skin. We feel ourselves sitting on the earth. We're in constant connection. It's on contrary, in the normal running life is when we find it difficult to actually experience the sense of real total connection with the world. The mindfulness of breathing is a good place that we can begin to experience how much we are connected with the world through the breathing in, the breathing out, through the flow of the world in us and us in the world. And part of the understanding, realization, or the truth that comes with mindfulness of the lived experience, as we go out into the earth and we step on the earth, as we feel the air on our cheeks, as we look at the tree in front of us, as we feel the nature in our being, as we breathe the air in and out, we feel and we experience the sense of no boundaries. The world out there and the world in here are actually one. And it's one of the truths that just arises when we just stop, pay attention, give space to our experience and reconnect with the living experience, with the lived body and the lived world. Thank you. So let's take a few minutes of quietness.